It's Thursday, the 26th of January. Welcome to the wonderful world of episode 104. It's Digital Outbox. Well, good evening. Thanks for joining us. My name's Henry, and joining me on the podcast this week is Ian. Hello, Ian.
Good evening. Good evening.
And Chris. Hi, Chris.
Hello. Ian, have you got anything to say about Henry's hosting ability tonight, do you think?
All I can say is you almost lost that intro, and it made me laugh.
Well, but well done. You know, it's all in the edit, I think, is what you used to say.
But I feel powerless now. I feel powerless to inflict evil.
You never really did inflict evil, though. You only threatened it.
I was very even-handed, I think you'll find.
Yeah, very good. Well, let's crack on. That's good, isn't it? We're less than 2 minutes in, and already we've had a crack on. But news this week, big news. First up, the Mega Upload website has been shut down. Ian, tell us about this.
Okay, I've never used this. But then, and I know Chris doesn't believe me because we talked about this a wee minute ago. So Mega Upload is seemingly some massive website that people use to share content. And like any massive website used to share content, people use to share illegal content. And I guess the bit that's controversial is nobody's really got an idea on how much illegal content it was being used for. Lots of people said it was, 90%, 95% of it was illegal. But in some of the news articles I've read and listened to, most of the users are saying, well, I've lost my data now and I can't access my data. So the FBI indicted Mega Upload on racketeering and criminal copyright infringement charges. And I actually Mega Upload itself had some high profile backers, and there was a controversial video about 3-4 months ago that got a lot of music industry people on the video, and then it was quickly pulled, and then it was reinstated on YouTube. So it's a bit of an odd one.
Yeah. Now, so I've seen Mega Upload all over the place. Quite a lot of game.
I've seen.
Effectively, the premise of the site was always a nice free area for you just to whack up files and share them with people.
I've seen it.
Their business
because
model.
Podcast talked about it. I've just never actually seen it.
Okay. Loads of game mod files and game patches and things like that get put up there because it's just a nice, easy way of doing it. Their model is that they charge you for speedier downloads, basically. So if you want to just download at a regular rate, you can for free. And if you want to download faster, then you pay them a certain amount of money to unlock the faster speed. But it sounds like the owner of it is... it's hard to say. He seems like a dodgy character, potentially.
You talk about Kim.com.
That, as he is now known. Yeah. So he was certainly raking in some money, but they're worried about, I think, the money going around the company. So it wasn't just the fact that there were lots of potentially illegal content. I mean, it's the worry of a free and easy website like that, isn't it? That anyone can upload anything. That's the whole point of it and the whole selling point. And also, there was no check on what was being uploaded. But again, it does on the face of it, it seems like the owner of a website taking responsibility for the actions of all the users. So that's the feeling you get from it. But this guy does seem, you get the feel of him being a bit dodgy. But maybe it's not fair of me saying that.
Well, no, I think we can see it.
It wouldn't be the first time we've got somebody dodgy running a company, would it? And I'm sure it won't be the last. But I mean, that doesn't mean to say that the company has dodgy products, or that you can shut down the.
Basically, this has sent jitters through the industry, though, right?
Yeah. And this is the thing. I mean, there's loads of these file uploading sites. Not just Mega Upload, but I mean, even things like Dropbox and stuff as well. And it's like, well, if they can take down. If they can take down Mega Upload, what about all those?
Well, what about Google? What about Amazon with their music lockers? Is that not the same thing? Or iCloud and making public links to things in iCloud?
Yeah, I imagine they've got special licensing. That's the whole point. They argue those things. Dropbox is also a bit more of a walled garden. And it just seems it's like this, you know, the free and open downloads that you literally put a file up and then it's available to anyone. That seems to be people getting the jitters over, and probably quite rightly so, because they don't want the FBI calling on them.
No, but it was what amazed me was there was File Sonic, File Serve, Uploaded To, Video BB, File Jungle, Upload Station, File Post, and Upload Box all just said, right, we're stopping now. Just that service is no longer available. And these were seemingly top. I mean, File Sonic is seemingly a top 10 player in the file sharing world with a billion page views a month.
A lot of these things are also just people for email attachments. You know, email's not the best place to put a massive attachment, so you just use one of these services.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think that's a controversial bit of the actual mega upload. There was people that was sharing legitimate, you know, small bands, indie bands, you know, sharing music with your friends. That data has now gone. It's locked and people can't access it. And the bit I was a bit confused about is that, I mean, the FBI, when they shut this down, there was raids across the world. You know, so there was raids in Germany, New Zealand and UK. So what was SOPA about in shutting down things outside America? Because it looks like they can do it already.
Well, they're trying to deport the guy back to America, aren't they, basically?
But it is a real shame. And if you've got if you're trying to use this to back these services to back up your data, it seems a bit crazy that you've now got to find out how you can back up your backups.
Good point.
Okay, well, let's move on. Google user data is going to be merged across all sites, and this plan's a bit contentious, isn't it? Because Google's getting rid of over 60 different privacy policies across Google, and it's replacing them with one that's a lot shorter and easier to read. So, I mean, that doesn't sound like it's too bad, but it's the privacy campaigners are getting a bit. Knickers in a twist, aren't they? Because it says that their policy covers multiple products and features, and it reflects our desire to create one beautifully simple and intuitive experience across Google. Right?
The fact that they've got 60 different privacy policies currently is, I mean, that sounds confusing in its own right to me. And okay, that's probably borne out the fact that they used to, you know, all these labs and things like that all come with their own attached things. So cutting down to one seems like you'd have kind of expected that they would have had one common theme anyway. I can see why people are getting a little bit concerned that all their data is going to effectively pulled and available across all those services.
But I assumed that already.
I did, and exactly. Yes. I cannot see a situation where having 60 different policies is better than having one cohesive one.
No, I think there's a lot of fear about, you know, now if I look at something in Maps and I look at something in Gmail and I look at a video on YouTube, they can combine it all and sell me adverts. Like,
they can probably do that anyway. I find it very hard.
I always assume.
I'm finding it, maybe they've won. I'm finding it harder and harder to get worried. And okay,
the thing that gets me, could anybody actually say I'm concerned because the privacy policy states something on Gmail right now and it's now been changed to this? I couldn't tell you one sentence from any of the 70 plus
because no one ever reads them.
You never read them. You like the service, you sign up, you use it, you pays your money, you takes your chance, and you're not paying any money, so you know you just have to take your chance.
I've actually liked the kind of unification that Google's been doing with the kind of the UI starting to get consistent. I've actually thought it's really good. I think this is another good step as well. I sign up for a service and I know that one privacy policy will hopefully apply to everything else going forward.
I suppose the only thing for me is that, you know, I mean, it's fine for us. We kind of know that a lot of these things are Google services. But, you know, do maybe most people do know that places like YouTube is a Google service. But, you know, they're not all got Google in the name. And you might not be aware that these things are Google things.
Do people care?
Yeah.
No, I guess there's the argument there that this is one person, this one company or one entity having an awful lot of information about you, and I can see why people get concerned, but there's nothing you can do about it anyway. You know, so so just go with it.
I think I've resigned. You've changed.
I have.
I remember many arguments about about Apple.
They've beaten me down.
And now it's just like
they've crushed me. Facebook laid the foundation. Now Google are just, you know, hammering the nails in.
Gmail's great. Do what you like.
We've got another Google story, though, about focus on the user.
This is a follow-up to Google adding their search your world, whatever they called it, and everyone saying that unfairly promoted Google Plus, effectively.
Which it did.
And this website is a Facebook engineer coming along and pretty much saying how it's a bit biased towards Google Plus.
So I think we just need to be clear. It's not just like a Facebook engineer. He's a Facebook engineer, but just be like one of the 10,000 employees. This is like a very high up product guy, you know, that is, you know, well up in the company. And there's no way that
we'll call him Mr. Mift, shall we?
Well, there's no way he would have put this out without the backing of Facebook, and it's gone through all their PR, and Mark Zuckerberg's probably signed off on it. They also include Twitter. They've mentioned a few other. I think Foursquare was mentioned on it. So they mentioned a few other of these. I guess kind of social websites that are a bit miffed that Google, with this change, yes, it does show me results from my friends more prominently, which is good, but the bit that's really annoyed people is the fact that in the bar on the right hand side, it's also promoting Google Plus pages, even pages that have no content whatsoever. So one of the examples in the video is search for Mark Zuckerberg. Now, previously, what would have came back is what's been most socially linked to. So his Facebook page would come back to, because he's got loads of content and people have linked to it. With the new changes, the Google Plus page comes back. And all it is a page with his face on it and no content whatsoever.
We're only talking about the right-hand side of the page here, though, where they traditionally have their adverts and things.
Google last week said that, well, Twitter removed the data so we could no longer index that properly. And there was a big hoo-ha about, well, is it Twitter that have removed that, and is that why Google are forced to do this? What this plugin is really clever, and I've got it installed just now. You know, it's a bookmarklet, so you can put it in as a browser extension as well for all the browsers. But you go to Google, do a search. So you could do a search for Jamie Oliver, do a search for, you know, any, do a search for cooking, do a search for music, and it'll always return these Google Plus pages. But when you click "Don't Be Evil," which is a great name, but if you click "Don't Be Evil," it then uses Google's APIs and the Google search indexes and just shows you what it used to show. So it's not doing anything with Facebook, it's not doing anything with Twitter. It's using Google's own search tools and APIs to return. If I don't look at Plus and I just look at what the Google social APIs are telling me here, and it's not just Facebook that comes back, you know. So if you do the cooking one, it's Jamie Oliver's Twitter page that comes back, because that's where he's sharing all his content right now. Zuckerberg gets Facebook because that's the most socially active one he's on. So it actually returns good. I mean, Google to me was all about returning good search results,
But in the main search area, that is still what's happening.
But it's not.
They're always talking about the right-hand side of the page, and that's not the main search.
It's also doing it under the, what did Google call that, drop-down, and it starts to return it very quickly.
Autocomplete, whatever, I can't remember. Instant search or something.
That type ahead instant search is also affected by the Google Plus changes. So that's returning Google Plus profiles in that autocomplete box. And that was all about, we'll return you the best results, we'll return you it quickly. And it's returning things like a Jamie Oliver Google Plus social page that he's got no content on.
Well, you know, there really is an answer to this. I mean, all these people should move over to Google Plus, because that's where all their stuff's going to get indexed and what people are going to see.
And that's why Facebook are pissed off, you know, that, because that's the threat they see, that Google have this power to do that. But Facebook are hardly the people to be moaning about this sort of crap, is it?
But I still loved it. I still loved it from the whole. I think what annoyed me was Google tried to present this as a. We aren't changing what's happening. We're just presenting your information from your friends in a better way. And I think they've been quite disingenuous about how it's actually working, especially when they're starting to say, well, Twitter, you've hidden information. That's why we don't index it. It is all getting indexed. It is all there and it can be found. They have changed quite radically. I mean, the bigger search commentators are saying, that's the biggest change in search we've seen in years.
It's fair to say that the Twitter-wise, the only thing that's changed on the indexing front is the real-time indexing. They've always crawled the website. So, you know.
Well, another thing for me as well is Twitter searching sucks. It really hacks me off. I think they've publicly said now the search is only valid for 6 or 7 days. And it's like, what are you doing? It just seems such a massive waste of a fantastic result. Yeah.
I'm sure the database in the back end just creaks and groans, though. I know they've got these clever databases nowadays, but
the Google real-time search would go back days and days and days and days and days. It was fantastic.
I think to compare Google and Twitter is not comparing like for like. They're not the same infrastructures and haven't got the same data centers.
Absolutely. I mean, you need massive data centers for that, you know. I mean,
the fact that Twitter runs on all these amazing weird databases that don't have indexes and all that kind of nice jazz. It's very clever.
Very clever.
Anyway, visit Focus on the User, watch the video. And if you want a chuckle, stick that extension or plug-in in your browser.
Well, from one tech giant to another, Apple had a record quarter this last quarter and surprised most analysts' expectations, except some of the bloggers, actually. They seem to be doing a much better job of predicting how well Apple were doing than these professional guys in the city, but
well, that's all the same bloggers that get all the predictions right about the next Apple products, right?
Well, if you make
there's enough bloggers out there making
if you
enough
make
noise.
Enough if you make enough predictions, some of them are bound to be true, and you could just delete the posts which were completely off topic.
Totally.
And I feel I must apologize for adding this in to this week's show notes, because we said, I think we did, the last time we talked about results was 6 months ago.
We said we're never going to do it.
And we went through a really bad podcast where we just round off Microsoft have made money. Google have made more money. Apple made more money as well.
Apple made more money than cents.
RIM weren't very good, and Nokia's like dead. And the last time they all came out, I refused to do it. And this week's the same. You know, or last week, sorry, Microsoft was there and Google was there and all that kind of stuff. But this one is like amazing. It is like an absolute record-breaking quarter for the type of company that Apple is, which is the kind of disposable but luxury type gadgets.
Do you know? I mean, there are loads and loads of stats here. We'll not go through them, but we'll leave them in the show notes.
Oh no, let's.
We'll leave them in the show notes. But the one that really got me was their gross margins on Apple products now is 44%.
Mm.
I mean, that is phenomenal.
And
you ask anybody in kind of trying to, you know, manufacturing high tech goods, trying to get, you know, even double figures they can be happy with. But 44%, unbelievable.
I've said it before. I say it again. That's not good for anybody.
No,
not good.
No,
for
and anybody. I've put in at the bottom there saying sitting on $97 billion, isn't that a bit obscene?
Yeah, considering what that could do and what that is taking away from, you know, other places that need that money, basically. But that's just that's an overarching macro looking style, isn't it?
Hang on. Who's talking about this? There's three of us here, and if we totted up how much money we've given to Apple, you know, I mean,
no,
really?
No, exactly.
Do you know what? You're right. And it's time to make a stand. So I think we should all pledge now that we won't buy any Apple products this year.
I'm thinking that through and I'm not sure I like it.
You'll die.
No.
They became the biggest company in the world again, briefly overtaking Exxon. I don't know if they're still there now, but again.
No, they're not. Exxon rose a little bit. We need to do a couple of crazy stats. 37 million iPhones in 3 months. And that was an iPhone that people were like, meh, it's just a really small update to the iPhone 4. Meh.
Never be that successful.
Well, actually, they talk about iPhones and stuff, don't they? But, I mean, a lot of those are actually 3GSs. There's a lot of people I know that are kind of moving to iPhones and saying, well, actually, I can get this on free now. I'm used to having a free phone on my on a contract. I'll just get the 3GS and are quite happy with it.
And why not? Yeah, it's a good phone.
Scary amount of iPads, 15 million and a quarter.
It's really starting to kick off now, isn't it? They've really done the job on that one.
And it's all the stuff like, you know, they sold more iPads in 3 months than HP sold laptops.
Yeah, change in times is amazing. Tim Cook must be, he's smiling all the way to the bank.
Mm. Absolutely. And the stat I really liked was that, and I've linked it in the show notes, and I'll put it in the show notes whenever we put the post up, but it was the second highest quarter of any company, and the other 19 were all oil companies. You know, so it's just for that type of company to get that much money. It is an obscene amount of money, but it's...
Yes, which reminds me of the other story, which I didn't get to put in the show notes. But
you've remembered.
I remembered.
Fantastic.
It was to do with Apple, but it was just an interesting piece of analysis, basically saying how Apple couldn't employ people in the States to make their phones and products, computers, even if they wanted to. Basically, because of the supply chain and the components just aren't available in the States, and the cost of labor for manufacturing their goods is such a small proportion of the overall cost that actually they really could be employing an awful lot of people in the States if they could get the components and stuff. But the supply chain is all in the Far East, and you know, you just can't get the stuff to the factories and stuff.
If they brought it to America, employed American people, they wouldn't be getting 44% margin. Shareholders wouldn't be as happy.
I'll find the link for that and we'll put it in there. They did the comparison, and as Henry's saying, the labour rate's actually very small. The difference in price overall is $50.
Yeah. So it's not a big difference, though, isn't it?
But it's not. I mean, it would be like, instead of 44%, it was probably about 30% or 35%. So it's still a really high gross margin. Then, as Henry's saying, it's a supply chains issue. They gave the example of the original iPhone had a plastic front. And within 6 weeks, they moved from a plastic front to Gorilla Glass.
That's right.
And nobody could believe that they could move to that Gorilla Glass in that short of time. Everybody said, they've demoed it with plastic. It's definitely going to be plastic. And then they says, a week before, they says, by the way, it's going to be glass. And everybody's like, wow. And the only place they could do that, they believe, is China, because there's nowhere else that they've got they could switch so quickly.
Yep.
And it was all about supply chain, and just being able to get that volume of product, being able to change the tooling and in that short of space, they believe that's the only place they can do that right now.
Yeah. So from one company on the up to another on the down, or maybe they are on the up now that RIM have sacked their CEOs, or the CEOs don't get sacked, do they? They've resigned. But Research in Motion, BlackBerry Maker, their co-chief executives, the guys that built BlackBerry from next to nothing. Have bowed to investor pressure, and they've now they've gone. RIM at its peak was $20 billion in sales last year.
It's a long time since they've come up with a classic and a class product, isn't it? According to the reviews, I've never had the pleasure or pain of using them.
To me, they're all over the place. Lots of different products, too many different operating systems. And just really unfocused. You know, I think they didn't take Apple or Android seriously. They thought that the corporate market's sewn up and nobody will ever dent that. And it reminds me of the way Microsoft almost treated it as well. It's like, we're in there, nobody will dent it, nothing to worry about. And the guy that came in is really, it's a horrible video that they've done. He just looks like a corporate droid. And they're starting to talk about that you know, for BB10, which is the next operating system, we're happy to license it. And it's like, yeah, that's going to work.
Yeah,
you know, in a world where you've got Android, and a world where you've got Windows Phone 7.5, and I guess soon to be 8, whenever it comes out, that looks amazing. Nobody's going to touch that.
No,
crazy, absolutely crazy.
So, there we go. And the UK has signed ACTA. What's ACTA again, Ian?
Oh, you swine! Right. So ACTA is the anti-counterfeiting. I preferred it when I hosted. ACTA is the anti-counterfeiting trade agreement, and this is news that's just come out today. But it's off the back of SOPA and PIPA last week, and there was a whole internet, you know, I guess a show of power from the internet, and it's made a lot of change to those particular laws. This is one that the first I heard it was actually listening to another podcast. So this week in Google, Jeff Jarvis was talking about it, and how it's a European power grab of the internet, and it's just Europe trying to do this and that, and it sounded pretty scary, because he was giving examples of things like, if this treaty gets signed, then, because another name for it is also the right to be forgotten law. So me as an individual could contact Chris or Henry as website hosts and say, you need to take down any mention of me from IP logs or whatever, and you need to prove that you can do that. So it becomes very onerous and very difficult, because there's lots of people who will want to do such things. But it's also, there's a whole stream of laws all wrapped into this anti-counterfeiting trade agreement. It's not just that one thing.
I think
thing.
It's fair to say they're not really laws. They haven't called it, it's a trade agreement. They've done that, yes, deliberately, so that they don't have to go through the legal process. They can call it a trade, yes, agreement, and then it can be done behind doors, basically.
And that's the controversial bit. Yep. So it's been negotiated behind the scenes, and that's certainly been the problem is, it's not easy to get a clear idea of what is covered by ACTA. And there's lots of websites that talk about that it's all about bringing in three strikes and you're out, kind of, internet laws, and that all got rejected. So the EU wouldn't sign up to that, and that got rejected out of ACTA. But what really kind of ticked me off is that, so the UK and 21 other European Union members have signed up to this today, but it's not a European thing, because US, Japan and Australia have already signed this document back in September. So it's not a European power grab. It's the big political nations again trying to take control of a lot of the internet and take the power away from people. I think this is going to be the next big fight over the coming months. It is not yet ratified in Europe. And also 5 EU countries didn't sign up: Germany, Netherlands, Estonia, Cyprus, and that wonderful place, Slovakia. They haven't signed up to it, but it's also not law. It goes through European Parliament in June. So there's now going to be a campaign to make sure that MEPs are enlightened, and it's going to be up to us. Whereas SOPA was America, it's going to be down to us in the UK to petition our MEPs to make sure they don't vote for this. And I guess to show how controversial this is going to get, an article I picked up from TechDirt this evening just before the podcast is that there was a European Parliament official, and he was called a rapporteur. And what that means is basically he's supposed to officially investigate on behalf of European Parliament and report back to them. And he's resigned over it today. And some of his statements, I want to denounce in the strongest possible manner the entire process that led to the signature of this agreement. No inclusion of civil society organisations, a lack of transparency from the start of negotiations, repeated postponing the signature of the text without an explanation being ever given. He also said he's never before seen manoeuvres from the right wing of this parliament to impose a rush calendar before public opinion could be alerted, thus depriving the parliament of its right to expression and of the tools at its disposal to convey citizens' legitimate demands. So some fairly strong statements, and again, a lot of this doesn't really get much press. It gets very, very hidden.
Well, it was a very last minute kind of, campaign, and
I can see this being the same, that it'll have some press just now because it's just been signed today. It'll probably dwindle, but I think round about June time, as long as we're not obsessing about European Championships and the upcoming Olympics, I think this will get a lot of press, certainly in the tech industry.
Well, yes, but if it's just in the tech industry, then, it really doesn't really go anywhere. I mean, they've been talking about this for some time. The negotiations have been going on. I mean, I remember, must have been way last year, when there was all the stuff about three strikes and you're out of being in this, and it being all behind closed doors and not no transparency, but these things drag on, and ordinary people kind of lose interest even if they found out about it in the first place. But it's always the same with these things, that there's the aim of it. They say that the aim of this is to harmonize copyright enforcement across the world, and you'd go, well, actually, that doesn't seem like such a bad idea. But the devil's always in the detail with these things, and the way that the things that they come up with that are supposed to help, maybe not really.
No.
Okay. Well, let's crack on, and. We've got a story about PC Anywhere. Do either of you use PC Anywhere?
No, I don't use PC Anywhere. And if you do, listeners, then I would stop right now. The anonymous hacker group stole some source code, basically, from old versions. This took place a while ago. This was back in 2006. But Symantec have confirmed that this week. they're not worried about their latest security products, but they are worried about PC Anywhere, because that source code got taken, and that could easily mean that someone from Anonymous can now use that to get control of your PC, basically. So if you use it, don't uninstall it.
Switch to something else. What else would you use?
Well, what I quite liked was they said, the pointed customer still white paper that recommends disabling PC Anywhere, unless it's needed for business critical use.
In case you need to share all your business critical documents. Yes, agreed. It's silly. But basically, don't use it. It's gone.
Gone.
Don't use it because it's guff as well.
Yeah. Isn't it go to my PC? Everyone uses now.
Yeah, that's one, and there's all these kind of WebEx and Cisco things as well. So there we go. Now, O2 had a bit of an oh no moment this week, didn't they?
Uh-huh,
I don't think that was original. I think I heard that from somewhere on the somewhere else. I wish that was original, but it's not. But they did, didn't they? Because they were sharing your mobile number with every single website that you were looking at.
So if you were using your mobile, to browse to a website, it was including your mobile number in the headers that got sent out. I assume they didn't know about this, but it seems hard to believe.
I think the thing is that they are you're supposed to do that when it's a secure site. Sometimes you want to identify people by that.
Right.
So they were doing that with the. On certain websites. I think the issue was that the O2 didn't check that, and they were sending it for everywhere. So any website knew your mobile number, which was a bit of an issue.
Bit of a booby. They reckon it's a data protection act violations and all sorts going on there.
So they've actually put their hands up and says, yes, we know we're violated. It was a mistake. We have fixed it. The Register had a post saying that O2 aren't alone. Other people do it, but they're just the ones that have been caught. I just like to thank Lewis Peckover, who set up this experiment and found the problem. I just wanted to say his name to be
honest. Thanks, Mr. Peckover.
Thanks, Lewis. Yeah. Well, that's the end of our news tonight, but we've got some picks. Ian, what's your pick?
My pick is Snapseed, which you've probably heard and seen for iOS, because we might have mentioned it, or you've probably seen it, because it was one of the free Apple downloads over Christmas, and amongst a whole load of dirge that they offered to us for free this year. But Snapseed is a really good iOS photo editor, especially on the iPad. I think just the bigger screen really helps. Very easy to apply effects, and it gives you a lot more control than something like Instagram. So I really like it. It's come out for Mac now. Very slick app. You can get a bit more control just because, again, the bigger screen size. A bit pricey. iOS, it's $2.99, and the Mac, it's £14.
People haven't signed up yet to this, really cheap desktop apps, have they? I don't know. It can't take much more to actually develop for the desktop nowadays.
No, and it is almost exactly the same as the iPad app.
All the filters
are exactly the same. But then... I thought it was really nice to use.
It's not break the bank expensive, but it's just a comment that people
I guess what's in for me, that is a cheap Mac app. I've bought lots of Mac apps since I moved to Mac, and we've had this discussion before that I didn't buy very much in Windows, but in Mac I've bought loads, and I've made quite a good effort in making sure that I am fully legit. And there's lots of alternatives for some of the big high price software like Photoshop. I just don't need to spend that much money. I can spend £40 and get a really good image out of there. And this for £14, it was
probably based on numbers as well, isn't it? You're going to get millions of downloads for an iOS. You're not necessarily going to get millions of downloads for your desktop, so you have to cover your costs somewhere.
Yeah.
And how would you say it compares to the likes of Pixel Meter?
Well, I think with something like Pixelmator, you do have to read the help file and understand how to use it. You can't just go in and apply edits. Whereas with Snapseed, you drop your image in and you've got some big buttons that guide you through. And in some ways, you can't really go wrong. And the website's got a few useful, you know, videos from, and how to use it. And really, it's just basically how creative you want to be. And I guess there's always an argument that I've taken a photo. Do you want just a pure photo and you've touched up the blues and you've maybe made some of the colour adjustments and you're making it more true to life? With this, you can apply textures and really go quite crazy on it. But some of the effects you get from that are really, really nice. So I actually thought it was really good. And I might even try and do a little video review for the website.
Oh, very good.
Who knows?
Who knows? We'll wait with bated breath. Actually, we better not, because...
You better not, because you might die. Don't hold your breath.
Don't hold your breath. No, don't. Well, my pick this week is MovieZoo, which is a PC app. It's basically a 3D animation software, which is free for non-commercial use, based on the Unreal 3D engine from a little studio in Glasgow called Digimania. And it's really surprisingly good. You can set up, they've got a whole load of nice little stock characters and objects and scenes and things that you can use. You can drop in audio and then get your characters to sync to the audio that you've dropped in, and follow through. They've got loads of video tutorials on their on YouTube, it's surprisingly good. I had a little play myself, and then I also let my 10-year-old daughter loose on it, who also had a great fun. Just surprisingly good, what you can get, the results that you get with it, for not very much time input. I don't think I'm going to be the next Nick Park, but if I had the imagination, then this is a great place to start.
This actually looks really good.
I think it's fair to also give you the proper spelling of the domain, because you'd never get it. It's MUVIZU. So it's MovieZoo.
So worth a little download, or quite a large download, actually. But it's well worth having a little play around with. And again, if I can get some separate little audio file clips from our podcast, maybe I will make a little podcast video. And that about wraps it up for this week. You can find us at www.digitaloutbox.com. You can email us info@digitaloutbox.com. We're also Twitter and Skype as Digital Outbox. Ian, where can we find you?
I am blogging at iand.net. I am Twittering at Schweeper.
And Chris?
I'm Twittering as CheesyUK.
I'm Talk Rhubarb on Twitter. And thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.